Welcome to the Nightly Five podcast with Ben O'Shea.
On today's show, an Aussie aid worker has been shot at in Gaza. Plus, Instagram is cracking down on sextortion. We'll tell you about the platform's nudity protections. OJ Simpson is dead at 76. We'll tell you who said good riddance and unpack OJ's complicated legacy. In Ballarat, there's been a spate of violence against women and bombshell historic sex crime charges against an AFL great. In our top story today, an Australian aid worker has been shot at in Gaza while trying to deliver water and supplies to a hospital.
UNICEF is now saying that one of its vehicles has also been hit with live ammunition. So far, there are no reports of any injuries to the agency's staff.
An Australian aid worker has described being shot at in Gaza while trying to deliver water and supplies to a hospital. Tess Ingram, a former Perth journalist who works with UNICEF, told Al Jazeera she was in a convoy of three cars that was fired on while stopped at a United Nations checkpoint leaving Rafah. She said the aid workers were on a coordinated mission to try and deliver fuel to water wells in the north and life-saving nutrition and medical supplies to Kamal Adwan Hospital. The UNICEF crew reached a designated holding point where vehicles are made to wait until the checkpoint is ready to receive them. They were waiting there when gunfire broke out in the vicinity. The gunfire came from the direction of the checkpoint towards civilians, who then ran away from the checkpoint and the gunfire hit Ingram's armoured vehicle. She said some colleagues outside the car were checking a mechanical problem with the nutrition truck when the fire broke out, and they had to run back to their armoured vehicle. Fortunately, they were safe, but three bullets hit the car that Ingram was in, right on her passenger door, the window, and also the bonnet of the car. She said it's just another example of how unsafe it is for humanitarian aid workers and how missions like these are made almost impossible. It comes less than 2 weeks after fellow Australian aid worker Zomi Francom was killed by Israeli fire, along with several colleagues from the World Central Kitchen charity. Ingram said the shooting was raised with Israeli authorities.
Meta is coming out with some new safety tools to crack down on sextortion and unwanted explicit images. The social media giant, which owns Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, will begin testing its new nudity filter on one of its platforms.
Social media giant Instagram has unveiled new measures to combat soaring sextortion in the wake of the tragic suicide of an Australian boy who took his own life after being targeted by Nigerian fraudsters. Here with more is chief reporter at The Nightly, Sarah Blake. Sarah, big tech gets criticised for not doing enough to protect its users. So what is Instagram doing about sextortion, which we've heard this week on The Nightly, is becoming a problem in Australia of epic proportions?
Yeah, that's right, Ben. We have heard a lot this week about sextortion and how it's impacting young people, you know, particularly young men. And there have been some pretty devastating impacts for those victims who have fallen prey to these scammers. So what happens is they set up a fake social media account and then they use those media accounts to send revealing photos to, you know, usually young men, and to sort of trying to lure them into a relationship, into a conversation where they say, here's my photo, why don't you send me one of you? And then once they get those photos, they threaten to disseminate them on social media unless the victim pays up. So that's pretty shattering. So what they're doing at Instagram is they're going to be blurring the nude photos and introducing a raft of other safety measures, they're calling them.
Yeah, so how will these nudity protections work?
So there's a few things. One of them is that people who are under 18, they won't be able to receive unsolicited messages from people they don't know. So that's a big one that will stop it. Nudes will be automatically blurred, and there will be an option for someone who does receive a nude photo to block and report that sender automatically without them having to sort of, you know, take extra steps to do so. And any time that someone is sending an image of themselves in the nude, there will be a filter that says, are you sure you want to do this? So, you know, sort of take some of the heat out of it. So they'll have to step back and consider whether they're doing the right thing by sending their own images.
Mm. And so I think that's all extremely good when it comes to dealing with this scourge that is sextortion. But we also don't want to kink shame anybody who is sending this type of content consensually to each other as part of their relationships. So what's the opt-in, opt-out requirement, and does that differ depending on the age of the user?
Yes, that's key actually. So Instagram says they're going to encourage everybody to opt in to this new nudity filter, but for users under 18, it will be automatic.
Yeah, I think that is. I think that's a very, very good policy. Absolutely. And so, will this apply globally? And does it apply to other platforms in the Meta family?
Yes, they do say that Meta says that they will be rolling this one out globally. They'll be trialing it with Instagram, but not yet. We won't apply yet to Facebook and WhatsApp, which is also owned by Meta.
Yeah, I think a step in the right direction. We criticise, as I said, Big Tech all the time for being very lackadaisical about how they do protect users from some of the worst things on their platforms. We'll see how it goes once it starts to roll out. And as we've said already this week, if you're a victim of sextortion or if you're in crisis, you can call Lifeline on 131114 or Kids Helpline on 1800 551 800. Now, Sarah Blake, Chief Reporter at The Nightly, thanks for joining me on The Nightly Five.
Thanks, Ben.
We start with that breaking news from the US first. And O.J. Simpson, the celebrity murder suspect acquitted in what was dubbed the trial of the century, has died.
Good riddance. That's the two-word obituary that Caitlyn Jenner offered for former NFL star and media celebrity O.J. Simpson, who has died of cancer at age 76. Jenner didn't mince words today when talking about Simpson, who was accused and acquitted of murdering his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend, Ron Goldman, in 1994. Nicole was nearly decapitated and Ron was slashed to death. The murder weapon was never located, but a bloody glove was found by police at the scene.
The bodies of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman were discovered about midnight Sunday on the steps outside the condominium where Mrs. Simpson lived. The Simpsons' two children were found asleep inside.
Now, Jenner is closer to the O.J. Simpson story than most. She was, after all, once married to Kris Jenner, herself the ex-wife of Robert Kardashian, who famously acted as Simpson's defense attorney during what was called the trial of the century. Simpson's football career made him a TV star, as he became the first NFL running back to rush for more than 2,000 yards in a season with the Buffalo Bills.
Buffalo select O.J. Simpson, halfback, University of Southern California.
O.J. running left, O.J. 5-4. There it is. He did it. He did it. Yeah.
But he found his way into mass market stardom during the commercial breaks, doing endorsements for RC Cola, Chevrolet, and most notably, Hertz rental cars. Back then, it was exceedingly rare for a black athlete. Acting roles soon followed, like the Naked Gun movies.
Norbert, how you, buddy? Hey, Doc says I should be on my bean and as good as new in a week.
And back on the force.
Norbert. That's wonderful.
But his on-screen success was nothing compared to the attention he received during the murder case.
When O.J.'s murder trial was taking place, it dominated the headlines every single day.
Fox 5's Linda Schmidt was heavily involved in the coverage here at Fox 5 and joins us now with a look back at what it was like. Linda.
It was absolutely wild. First of all, it was dubbed the trial of the century, and it was televised live for the world to see, and I can tell you the world was watching.
That murder case changed the media forever. The low-speed chase on the Southern California freeway was one of those where-were-you monoculture moments, like the Kennedy assassination or the moon landing.
O.J. Simpson is still traveling very slowly northbound along the 5 freeway, coming up again towards the 91 intersection.
It happened on a Friday night, interrupting Game 5 of the NBA Finals. Tens of millions of people tuned in to see what O.J. would do sitting in the back of that white Bronco with a gun held to his own head. Once the trial began, it became the biggest thing on TV. It was a soap opera that lasted 9 months. It was a legal thriller. It was an interactive whodunit before the age of murder podcasts. It was a social drama that exposed racial chasms and the flaws of the legal system. It was a dark comedy with buffoons, villains, and comic relief figures. It was a tragedy too, of course, and viewers could not agree which part of it was a tragedy. And that too was a tragedy. There was evidence of OJ's domestic abuse of Nicole, her frantic, terrified 911 calls, which continued after their divorce.
911 emergency.
Can you get someone over here now to 325 Gretna Green? He's back. Please.
Well, okay, what does he look like?
He's O.J. Simpson. I think you know his record. Could you just send somebody over here?
Okay, what is he doing there?
He just drove up again.
He just drove
somebody
up.
Over?
Okay, wait a minute. What kind of car is he in?
He's in a white Bronco, but first of all, he broke the back door down to get in.
Okay, wait a minute. What's your name?
Nicole Simpson.
Okay, is he the sportscaster or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Wait a minute. We're sending the police. What is he doing? Is he threatening you?
I'm going nuts.
But the critical moment in the trial went down in infamy. Here's OJ's legendary defence attorney, Johnny Cochran.
It makes no sense. It doesn't fit. If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Simpson's acquittal tore the nation in half, with black people on one side declaring victory against a racially biased criminal justice system and white people looking on appalled at a perceived injustice. But the trial irrevocably altered OJ's life. Then in 1997, a civil suit by the victims' families found Simpson liable for the deaths of Nicole and Ron and ordered him to pay $33.5 million in damages. He paid little of that debt, however, moved to Florida and struggled to remake his life, raise his children, and stay out of trouble. Then, in 2006, he sold a book manuscript titled If I Did It, and a prospective TV interview giving a hypothetical account of murders he had always denied committing. A public outcry ended both projects. A year later, he was arrested after he and other men invaded a Las Vegas hotel room of some sports memorabilia dealers and took a trove of collectibles.
Nearly 12 years after beating a double murder rap, O.J. Simpson is back in handcuffs once again, facing serious charges. After 5 hours of questioning from police Sunday, Simpson was taken to the Clark County Detention Center in Las Vegas, where he will remain until an arraignment later this week.
He claimed that the items had been stolen from him, but a jury in 2008 found him guilty of 12 charges, including armed robbery and kidnapping, after a trial that drew only a smattering of reporters and spectators. OJ was sentenced to 9 to 33 years in a Nevada state prison. He served the minimum term and was released in 2017. In 2016, more than 20 years after his original murder trial, the story of O.J. Simpson was told twice for mass audiences on television. There was The People vs. O.J. Simpson, Ryan Murphy's installment in the American Crime Story anthology, which focused on the trial itself and on the disparate array of characters brought together by O.J., who was played by Cuba Gooding Jr.
Whatever you decide to do, whether you're with me or not, you gotta know this. I loved her.
And then there was OJ, Made in America, a five-part, nearly eight-hour installment in ESPN's 30 for 30 documentary series, which detailed the trial but extended the story to include a biography of Simpson and an examination of race, fame, sports, and Los Angeles over the previous half century. When considering the complicated and often horrible legacy of one of the most famous Americans of the past 50 years, no one put it better than OJ himself when he wrote a letter before fatefully driving in that white Bronco. Don't feel sorry for me.
Crews have returned to Ballarat to search for the body of Samantha Murphy after a 22-year-old man was charged with her murder. Ainsley Kosh is there. Ainsley, we can now name the accused.
Yes, we can now reveal the accused is 22-year-old Patrick Stevenson, the son of former AFL player Oren Stevenson, who played for Richmond and Geelong.
Small Victorian town of Clunes is in shock this morning following the alleged murder of 23-year-old Hannah Maguire. Her alleged killer, 21-year-old Lockie Young, will face court today.
A Ballarat mother of five has been murdered by her partner in a case that's shocked the community. The killer, who had bikie gang connections then, took his own life. The whole crime unfolding while two of the woman's children were at home.
About 2 weeks ago, 23-year-old Hannah Maguire became the third woman allegedly murdered by a man in Ballarat in the past couple of months. First, mother Samantha Murphy disappeared on February 4. Less than 2 weeks later, mother of five, Rebecca Young, was strangled by her partner, Ian Butler, in a suspected murder-suicide. On Tuesday this week, 21-year-old Lachlan Young fronted court charged with Maguire's murder after her body was found in a burnt-out car in bushland near Scarsdale, about a 15-minute drive from the house the couple bought together last year. The alleged violent murder has sent shockwaves throughout the Ballarat region, the state of Victoria and Australia. The city in Victoria's northwest, about 120 kilometres from Melbourne, has come to represent the scourge of violence against women that haunts and shames Australia. Already 18 women have been killed in this country this year, according to advocacy group Counting Dead Women Australia. And more than one in four women in Australia have experienced violence by an intimate partner or family member since the age of 15, according to the personal safety survey by the Australian Bureau of Statistics. Right now, the town of Ballarat is awash with dark gossip. The Nightly has confirmed Young was on bail at the time of the alleged murder on charges of common assault, aggravated burglary, home invasion and property damage. He'll face court on May 6 alongside his dad, Anthony Young, who is facing additional charges of threatening to kill and resisting an emergency worker on duty. Ballarat has higher rates of domestic violence compared to the rest of the state of Victoria, according to data from the Crime Statistics Agency. That shameful record is now national news, but it's a story that could be told about so many regional towns and all the major cities. The shame is one the whole country must bear. To read Remy Varga's first-hand account of the situation in Ballarat, download the Nightly app. And if you or someone you know needs help, call 1-800-RESPECT. That's 1-800-737-732.
Beautiful mark by Big Dietrich, who's already kicked three goals, and can he make it four? It's a fair way out. It's a fairly big kick. It's a goal!
Australian rules football great Carl Dittrich, a.k.a. St Kilda's blonde bombshell, has been charged with historic child sex offences. Nightly sports editor Ben McClellan is in the studio with me now. Ben, what can you tell us about these offences?
Yeah, look, it's really rocked the Melbourne footy community today. So Carl has been charged over these alleged offences, which took place in the mid-80s, just after he had stopped playing famously. He was known as one of the hard men of VFL, as it was then. He was suspended more than 30 times in his career. His matter was heard in a Victorian court today. He didn't appear in person. A lawyer appeared on his behalf. We don't know a lot of detail other than it relates to a child aged 16 years or under.
Yeah, it's a name that probably won't be familiar with younger footy fans.
Yep.
And Dittrich made his debut with St Kilda in 1963 as a 17-year-old. And he became a household name at the time. And as you say, had a reputation for being a hard man in the ruck. And then he played 285 games between the Saints and a career at the Demons as well. He coached the Demons for 2 years as a player coach. He retired in 1980, purchased a wheat farm with his family near Swan Hill, and stood as an independent candidate for the seat of Swan Hill in the 1999 Victorian state election, was unsuccessful, and he's due back in court on June 28 for a committal mention, so that's something that we'll be following closely. Sticking with the AFL, Sam Powell-Pepper returns for Port. He was one of the first players this year who was rubbed out with the, you know, the league's new, I guess, emphasis on cracking down on the bump.
Yeah. So he served 4 weeks for a pretty ugly clash in a pre-season match. Sort of feels like a lifetime ago in terms of the suspensions we've had since then. Obviously, this week we've been rocked by the homophobic slur suspension. But yeah, he comes back for the Port Power. Port are obviously playing very well. And the question is, you know, as one of the first players to come back from, you know, a significant suspension, will he have curbed the way he plays, or, you know, is a player like that sort of hardwired to go hard at the ball, put their body, in potentially dangerous positions with other players? So I guess time will tell on that one. But of course, he's been urged, you know, not to curb his aggressive edge.
Well, talking about aggression, let's switch to the NRL.
Yes, and I think plenty of aggression going on there. Aggression. None of it on the field.
Yeah, lots of it seems to be from the New South Wales press pack directed at South Sydney. And we've spoken about this a number of times on the podcast. Let's take a listen to Rabbitohs coach Jason Demetriou.
Doesn't go for very long.
In a press conference. Yeah, don't turn your volume down. You miss it.
I'm sure you've had easier weeks in your life. Firstly, like, how are you travelling given all the external
things? I've had a great week of training. Energy through the week's been outstanding.
Have you been out of lockdown?
Oh, there's some new blokes coming in. You know, Jai Gray, Ty Munro, David Mowali back. I'm excited by the energy they've brought.
In terms of you personally, though?
I'm really looking forward to the performance. Can't wait. Your energy through the roof. Looking forward to it.
Do you believe you're coaching for your job on Saturday night?
I believe I'm coaching for a great performance this week, and that's what we'll get. Thank you.
That's it.
Short but sweet.
Thanks, Zach. Yeah, so how long did that press conference last for?
Yeah, there was quite a good headline, which I was jealous that I didn't use, which was gone in 27 seconds. So there was a press conference. He fronted up. You know, there was thousands of microphones in front of him. You know, sort of started. He looked pretty confident. Got asked a few questions. None of them about the match that they were playing. All about, you know, his tenure. Talked about the team having, you know, sky high energy. They're ready to play. And then he said, "I believe in the team," and that's all you're going to get. And then he walked off. and so that was it. But, you know, interestingly, the knives appear to also be out for Brad Arthur, the Parramatta coach. So he's been the coach for more than 10 years. They played in a grand final 2 years ago against Penrith, where they got trounced, fell off a cliff last year, sort of struggling again this year. He's also had a pretty dicey press conference today where he's been asked whether whether someone like Wayne Bennett should be brought in to sort of, you know, act as a coaching director to help him out. Yeah. So it's a pretty hard time for NRL coaches at the moment. Last night we had a, you know, terrific game between the Roosters and the Knights, which you know, the Roosters edged out the the rather hapless Knights. And yeah, well, yeah, and just back on Dimitru, his team is playing Cronulla, and yeah, there's obviously been a lot of talk, win, lose or draw. It sounds like his days might be numbered, with Big Mal Meninga sort of wryly hinting that he would be quote unquote interested in an interim coaching job at South. Mm. So, yeah, a lot going on.
A lot going on. And talking about Wayne Bennett,
yes,
he's involved in the Battle of Brisbane.
Battle of Brisbane, the walking wounded tonight. So it's Dolphins, the Dolphins and Brisbane. They've both lost a lot of key players. But a big in for the Broncos is Rhys Walsh, who had that sort of horror eye socket
I'm
injury.
Not sure if his whole face is in.
But he's got some very sort of very colourful pink headgear that he's wearing to sort of help protect his face as well. So sort of RoboCop-esque. So that's been slightly controversial, whether he's been brought back too early, you know, whether the Broncos are playing mind games by talking about his return and the other team's going to go soft on him because, you know, they're all Queenslanders, they're all going to play in the Origin soon. And, you know, I guess a Dolphin player does want to be the one responsible for knocking Rhys Walsh out of Origin. So it'll be quite a fascinating game. The Dolphins have been playing pretty well, but they've been racked by injury. The Broncos, because of injury, have been struggling. But yeah, so it should actually be a pretty fascinating game. We might sort of see some sort of lesser known stars come to the fore in this match.
Yeah, exactly. The next generation of Queensland superstars for the Mighty Maroons. And now, okay, well, let's just park Australian sport there. This is the time in the show where you're going to try and convince me that Tom Brady is going to make a comeback.
I'm not going
to
try and convince you of anything, mate. You know, it's another fantastic bit of sports journalism that's come out of a podcast, like one of these ones. Tom Brady's been on a podcast where he's hinted that, you know, he wouldn't rule out potentially coming back into the NFL if a team, you know, lost their star quarterback and needed somebody, I guess, to fill in, even though the NFL has about 500 people in each team. So obviously that will get speculation going in the US. And, you know, he's obviously, you know, not a day over 46. But I mean, you know this better than me, mate. So obviously you're not a big believer in it.
No chance. Oh, I think, you know, with the salary cap alone, he'd basically have to come back and play for free. Can you see that happening?
Well, maybe he's bored.
It may be. But he's also got like a $40 million a year broadcast contract waiting to start as soon as he wants to get into the booth for Fox. So I don't know. But he could commentate as he's playing. Yeah, exactly. Can you imagine? Big Bash style. Love it. And we love you as well. Nightly sports editor Ben McClellan, thanks as always. And that, folks, is today's show. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and join me again on Monday on The Nightly Five.
The Nightly Five podcast is brought to you by Seven West Media. For all these stories and more, head to thenightly.com.au, helping you get in front of tomorrow.